Baranin, Malta through international eyes. Welcome to the show. It's Colin Fitz with you on Campus 103.7 as usual. James Watt, who used to be a presenter here in Malta in the early 90s on radio, a station called Island Sound that opened in 1992. Welcome, James. I'm in contact with you over WhatsApp. You're in the UK at the moment. So welcome to the show, James.
Thank you very much, Colin. Good to see you, because I remember you when you were a small boy, you know, lots of hair and everything. And now life has moved on.
Yes, yes. I was very thin as well in those days. I was such a youngster. I was only about 17. And you were the first voice to be heard on Island Sound, weren't you?
Yeah, it was a very, very exciting time, because because back in the old days, people might not remember this, Malta only had the state-run stations, and all of a sudden the government, I guess, decided to open up the airwaves to a whole pile of radio stations. And we were one of that gang, and we were, I guess, the only real full-time English-speaking music station that was on. I know Bay came on as well, but they were a bit more Maltese than us. And so we were very traditionally sort of British in many ways. And we came on, and it was a thrilling time to be on air. And I was first voice on that early morning. I don't know what day it was, a Monday or a Tuesday, I guess.
Do you remember the first things that you said when you opened, when you started the programme?
Well, I think I said something like, welcome to Island Sound Radio, and this is the new era in broadcasting for the Maltese Islands. And we were certainly very excited. There'd been a lot of hype for the radio station before it came on air, because there was quite a lot of competition, but we were one of the first to get on air. So that was a good advantage to us. And I remember I arrived in Malta about 2 or 3 months before the event, and when we arrived, it was the day of an election result.
Oh God!
And I forget which party won, but Frank Salt said to me, that one of the owners of the station, he said, if one side get in, you're going home, and if the other side get in, we're okay. And the right side got in. And there were about the day we arrived, the result came through, and there were parties in the street. It was a big result. I don't know if this happens all the time on a Maltese election, but there was a huge party in the street. You couldn't get anywhere because everyone was celebrating the new government that had come in. And it meant that we, and this reform bill to all the radio stations, was good to go, and all was fine. And there was no studio, and a guy called Phil Miles and me arrived, and we kind of lived in the same flat for a while, and just got together trying to work out what we were going to do, who we were going to find to do the shows, because back in that day, there weren't many Maltese people that had done much sort of popular radio, music radio, where we chatted away about, you know, whatever it is we were chatting about and told jokes and been generally funny. And so we had to get used to doing all that. And we started at Frank Salt's office in St. Julian's.
Indeed.
With a load of estate agents. And so that was the first part. Our first day in Malta was many months before the first day of Island Sound.
Absolutely. Well, just to make a reference to the election, this was February 1992, and it was the Nationalist Party that won that election. It was the second election they won after the victory of 1987. And they had started to move Malta towards membership of the European Union and have sort of these new ideas like having more than one radio station in Malta, opening up the licenses. And the Labour Party in those days still believed that it would be better to just have one state radio station, and kind of they were sticking to their 80s beliefs. And that's what Frank Salt meant. If they got in after 5 years of the new approach, then they probably would have sort of reversed the process. But they didn't. And then they went on to embrace the whole culture of having many stations. They have their own radio station. They have their own TV station as well. But it was still a delicate time in 1992. So when you came and it was the PN, the Nationalist Party, that got in, sort of the process continued and you had a job, and so eventually so did I. And yes, I remember meeting you and being trained by you and Phil Miles as one of the youngsters who applied after seeing an advertisement in the Times of Malta. We applied to join the station and be trained to become DJs and presenters. And it was me, it was people like Gianni Zamit, who is now quite a big big personality here in Malta. And we were young and really eager to learn.
Yeah, I remember, because we got hundreds of cassettes of young aspiring DJs, and you all had to send a, you know, 2 or 3 minute, 4 minute bit of audio in to us, and we'd got piled boxes of these in the Frank Salt's office where we were listening, actually, and we listened through, Phil and me, and we sort of picked out ones we quite liked. And then thought, well, we better get you guys in. And we got no studio to do that. So we had to sort of make up a makeshift studio in a back office. I think probably a broom cupboard in Frank Salt's office that got spare somewhere. And I remember we got you guys in, Colin and Gianni and Terry Farrugia, of course, the great Terry Farrugia came in. And we got them to, you pretend to introduce a couple of songs and do a weather forecast or something like that. And then we kind of put together a sort of list of people who we quite fancied to be the sound of the station, because it was important that we got the local people on, because it is in Malta. So we didn't want just us Brits doing stuff. Now, there were about three of us from the UK that had come out. Peter Quinn came later on in the process, but Phil and me were the first ones out there. And so we did need some. And we saw obviously some talent in you, Colin, and Gianni, and then and Terry Farrugia became a huge part of the station. And we put together a kind of schedule, and then we had to just wait to get a studio, which was a couple of months away.
Yes, fantastic memories of coming into Frank Salt's office in St. Julian's and practicing and being told about projection. I came from the world of theatre, so one of the first lessons you or Phil Miles told me was, you mustn't project so much. You've got a microphone. It picks up your voice perfectly without you thinking that you're on stage. I remember that was one of the first lessons. yes, I had pretty good English, so I think that was the main reason why I made a member of the team. But people like Terry Farrugia very quickly became part of the Daily team, along with Bernie Lynch, who was an Irishman,
but he lived in doing our late show. Yeah,
indeed, he still does in Malta, married to a local. So there was a mix of people like you who came over to train us, and a bunch of locals who had some experience or no experience at all. What did you do in the UK before you came to Malta? You must have had obviously radio experience there.
Yeah, I'd been at a few radio stations in the UK. I'd been at one called Viking FM, which is based in Hull in Yorkshire, or in Humberside as it is now, but East Yorkshire. And that was the big local station. And back in the day, there were less stations around. And so if you were on a local commercial station, you were quite big news in a town. Like, you know, about in Vikings days, about 40% of the population listened to the station. So you were quite well known in the in the area. So I'd work for them, a station called TFM, which is up in Teesside as well. And I'd been doing various shows, but I'd been doing quite a lot of late night shows. But then I saw this advert in the, again, like you, in the Times of Malta, but I saw one in the UK broadcast press to come out to Malta. Mm-hmm. And again, we sent out cassettes, as it was there, I think we probably sent it to a PO box in London somewhere. And then then Frank Salt and John came out to London to interview a few likely candidates.
I think John Rosser, who was
John Rosser,
a very nice deep voice, and he was involved in theatre here, and he was one of the directors.
That's right, yeah. So it was Frank and John that were really running the show. So I had been working at those couple of stations before, a little bit for the BBC as well beforehand, and I think the job at TFM had just maybe come to an end, and I was about to start working for a station called BFBS, which is the Forces Radio, which is known, of course, in Malta to older listeners.
Yes, it stopped in 1979.
Yeah, so it was a long time ago, but BFBS is still very much alive and well. And I'd gone for a job down there, and the guy said, yeah, come and work for us if you like. And about when I was being interviewed, I'd got a message from Malta saying, do you want to come out here? Because I'd been for an interview. I said I'd been for an interview to the BFBS people, to the Malta. And the BFBS guy said, go to Malta. Go to Malta. Come back here when Malta's ended, because you'll have a great time. So he said, just give us a call when you come back. which I did do, and did a very long time with BFBS after that. So we met in a hotel, Frank and John and me, in a hotel somewhere in London. We had a chat. They liked what I was talking about. It talked about what we might do with the radio station. And then they said, okay. And their big sales pitch was that you will get paid the same as the Prime Minister of Malta.
Really? Is that what they said?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I don't know if at that time the Prime Minister was on a very good wage. I think he was doing okay, but it wasn't like millions of pounds or lira. But I think probably Prime Ministers in the past, maybe they still do, have some private income coming in.
Of course.
So they don't need lots of extra money.
Then again, the cost of living was a bit lower as well in those days. But had you ever been to Malta, or like, when was the first time in your life that you heard of Malta? Was it maybe at school? Well, or
yeah, we knew about Malta because Malta was a popular holiday resort to come to, so Malta was known. I'd never been there, but we were very aware that Malta was almost a little England for many times because of the George's Cross that Malta got. It's known about in Britain,
at least in your generation,
from the wartime. Mm-hmm. And there's many TV documentaries about Malta and all that. But I'd never been to Malta. I had lived abroad before. I'd worked on the cruise ships. I don't think my cruise ship ever came into Malta. And I had worked for a yachting company in Greece beforehand as well. So I was well used to living abroad because I'd been on the cruise ships and I'd been sailing yachting in Greece for a season or two before I came to Malta. So I like the idea of travel, which I think probably helped Frank think I might not freak out when I come to a new country. I didn't know about Malta at all, but I got to know it very well and love it.
Do you remember your first impression when you came off the plane in 1992?
Yeah, Yeah, because we came in, it must have been in, it was quite early. It was in the winter.
Yeah, January or February, I think. It must have been.
Yeah, but it was sunny the day we arrived, which I know it rains a lot in January. But we got good sunny weather in the daytime. It was a bright, sparkling day. We were met at the airport and we came straight to Frank Salt's office. It was a little bit crazy because of this election thing going on. Mm. And I think it was that day when there were all the parades, or the next day, all the parades were starting about the election. So we arrived at Frank Salt's office from the airport. And he said, oh, we'll take you up to, we've organised a flat for you. And we went and looked, got settled in. And they just gave us a little tour around Malta. I think we had a pastizzi as well.
What did you think?
I thought it was amazing. I love them, actually. It's my favourite thing. Not very good for your waistline, to be honest, nowadays, but that's the way it is. And they gave us a tour and they showed us where the studios were going to be, which was in Floriana.
Indeed.
And the studios are now a very nice block of apartments.
Yes, very tastefully restored building. But for many years, when the station closed, they remained a bit derelict. But in the last few years, there's been a lovely restoration on that building in the corner near the polyclinic.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and so we went in there, and of course there was nothing in there. It was a building site. And they said, this is going to be turned into a radio studio. And we had two of them. And we worked out at that point the studios were going to be quite small because the rooms they're designed from were a very small rooms.
They were bedrooms.
And it's a little bit different from nowadays because people can set up radio stations in their back bedroom. In fact, I broadcast from my back bedroom in the UK now still. But you had all the other stuff, like you had all the CDs, thousands of CDs, and thousands of what we call cartridges. And these are like kind of big cassettes. If you see those old American movies from the 60s and 70s, you sometimes see an American film star putting a cart into a car. It's quite rare that you see that nowadays.
Yeah.
But they were sort of big blocks of, and they had hundreds of those
for
in the studio as well,
and jingles,
for the adverts and the jingles and all that sort of thing. And that's all changed very much nowadays. So we had a little room with thousands of CDs and hundreds of carts in there
library.
With all the adverts.
Yeah.
And that was but that was not there. It was, I remember sitting on a cardboard box in the studio. And it wasn't a studio, it was a room that was a building site. And it was what an exciting time. As we knew, we were going to create something that Malta hadn't ever heard before, because it's just not the way that radio had been done there. No. And we were going to bring this new, fresh sound. We knew that particularly the kids would love it because it worked in the UK.
Even when BFBS would broadcast here in the 70s and before that, I don't think they had that sort of zany, loud, happy approach that you brought, for example, to your breakfast show.
Yeah, well, that's right. That was very common. I mean, I'd done some breakfast shows in the UK before, and that was always the aim to be on a breakfast show. And the way that breakfast shows run, obviously, well, like they do now on radio stations across the world that you will have plenty of in Malta, you know.
Yeah.
People having fun, waking up with a smile, bit of news, bit of weather, some
bit of gossip.
Giveaway.
Yeah.
Yeah, all that sort of thing. What's going on? What you're talking about in the pub or the bar is what we're talking about on the radio. Mm-hmm. And I was a solo performer. Some radio stations have double headers, you know, as well, which is very common. A solo performer is, I guess, a little bit cheaper to do because there's only you have to pay one of you.
yeah.
And so, yeah, but I think that was the new thing when we were talking to you guys that were just new to us, you'd not heard that so often. I think Terry had heard it a bit more than most of you. He'd obviously spent a lot of time searching stuff out from America in particular.
Because he was brought up in Canada, that's right. He was Maltese Canadian. Yeah. So he brought that element of what he had heard on American and Canadian radio. So he learned very quickly because he had heard it so much on American radio before. He very quickly became part of the daily team because he didn't need so much training as, for example, I did, who had only heard sort of Maltese radio before, which was always quite serious.
Right, because and the thing was that with radio, and you'll find this on radio stations now, there are different people at different times of day that bring something else to the station. Mm-hmm. So traditionally, it's always the guy on it first thing in the morning at breakfast time, who's the funny guy. Yeah. And then they get on with the music a bit more after that. And that's what we did, because Phil, he was a smooth voice, and he was the actual boss of the running the station. I was second in charge. Mm-hmm. He did a more standard commercial radio show, and then Peter Quinn came in for a while, and he was a smooth voice. But then it was very important that we got Terry, got somebody that actually was from Malta on the daytime lineup, because we wanted that, because he obviously knew a lot more about Malta, because we were catching up all the time because we didn't know. Yes. But yeah, so it was I was the sort of the funny guy, but you get most listeners at breakfast time. Yes. That's when listeners arrive at a station. You've got to get listeners at breakfast, and then they stay with you all day long, and that's why they regard breakfast shows as so important.
Did you? You must have found it a bit hard to pronounce certain place names, for example, and surnames of people who would be calling up for a competition. How difficult was that?
It was quite difficult to get your head around it, and there was a list in the famous Frank Salt office that somebody had put together. I don't know if it was one of his real estate people or the ladies in the office that had been tasked with coming up with all the place names that were really difficult. Like, I'm probably going to say it wrong, but Sweetie, and it was the X of the names is quite difficult.
Schlendy and
with a shirt sort of thing. So
you had a list with how to say them phonetically.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And then because with place names, there's not too many places in Malta. So we could get to learn the sort of regular ones. And if we ever did say it wrong, someone from the office, a local, would say, "You don't say it like that, you idiot. You say it like this."
You were quite, you've built up a following quite quickly. I mean, your relationship with the listeners, even the locals, not just sort of the British residents of Malta or foreign people who understood English, who obviously tuned into Island Sound because it was easy for them to understand. But even the locals who wanted to hear radio in English and wanted to hear something new, they very quickly warmed up to you, didn't they?
It was, yeah. It was really nice that we went on, and we were a big hit from the word go, which was really nice, because there were a few other stations coming on at the same time.
Yeah.
And I guess our main competition was over at Bay.
Yes.
But they were doing quite a lot of Maltese speaking hit radio.
They had British presenters, but they did have some Maltese programs. Whereas Island Sound was 24 hours in English. I think Frank Salt's project or idea was sort of to bring back BFBS or have a sort of mini BBC in Malta.
Because they were going to, I think they were, from my memory, that we were going to put some BBC shows on. We had an idea of putting on some comedy shows at lunchtime,
yes,
that sort of thing. Quite an old-fashioned there, so that would make it a little bit more speech-orientated. Phil really pushed against doing any of that, and really want it to be music all the time with some local interviews, obviously.
But in the first year, as you're right, because in the first year, they must have bought them and then got convinced not to play them in the morning or at lunchtime, because they all ended up being played in the evenings. And there was the BBC Play of the Week, The Goon Show, Round the Horn, all these old British BBC shows that ended up being played for the first couple of years in the evenings.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because that was quite fun, because they were, I mean, and Phil had worked in a lot of commercial radio before he'd come to Malta, and he'd worked at quite strict formatted stations. So he definitely wanted pure music and the usual commercial radio stuff through the day, because he knew that pulled in a big audience. But yeah, it was lovely to get so much recognition. And when we opened the phone lines for anything, they went absolutely barmy. If you were doing a competition or ringing up for requests, they would ring off the hook. It was amazing to see the reaction, because if we did a cue to call type thing where you ring up when you hear a song, you could see the phone lines light up instantaneously. So it was very nice that we were welcomed so nicely to the islands.
And we'd have the occasional outside broadcast or get together with the listeners in some charity football match or something, and a lot of people would turn up, wouldn't they?
Oh yes, it was going out and meeting actual real listeners is a great thing to do, because you get stuck in your little studio, like we all do, sit in our studio, but to go and actually meet the listeners, it brings it to life.
Yes.
Because we know they're there, but it's nice to have actual confirmation that someone says, and then said, oh, you were talking about that the other day, and that was funny, or, you know, I don't think that was right, you know, you were wrong of that. And because a way to get reaction on the radio, of course, is to say something a bit wrong. And people are very keen to tell you.
Of course, yes. They love that.
I always think it's funny, because I get, and I still to this day occasionally get people sort of saying, oh, I don't listen to you. I don't listen to you. I think it's rubbish what you do. And I say, oh, well, turn off then. You can listen to something else. And they say, I will. And then the next day, they'll ring up and say, you still know better, which I always think is funny. Because if you go to if you go to a shop, you don't go into a shop and say, oh, by the way, I think this shop is terrible, and then go back there every week. It's just the same. Yeah. I can't believe people do it.
So to go back to 1992, because you spent about a year here, didn't you, before you went back to the UK?
That's right, yes. I was here for a year, big year for me, because I also got married in that year.
Was it here in Malta?
I didn't get married in Malta, but my wife, Zoe, who's known on air now as Lady Watt, is still live together. We're still married and all that sort of thing, all those years are gone. But we'd been boy and girlfriend for quite a long time before I came to Malta. And all of a sudden, I thought, well, let's do it. And then we got married. I proposed to her when she came out for a holiday.
Oh, because she wasn't here with you all throughout?
No. I came solo. So she came out in the May, I think. and we had a week or two together. I was still doing the radio shows. And then I said, why don't we do it? And she said, okay. And then, I mean, people spend about 2 years planning weddings, don't they, nowadays?
Yes.
But we were married 5.5 weeks later. She went home and she organised the whole wedding, because I was still in Malta. And she went home. This is before the internet. So she sent me a picture from a magazine of a ring that looked a bit similar to the one that she'd just bought at the jeweler's for the engagement ring. So I never picked that. And then she said, is this okay? And she told me how much money it was. And I said, yeah, get that one.
Not very romantic.
She bought her own engagement ring, and then she sorted out the entire wedding with her mum and dad. And we did it on a Friday, so it was cheaper. And we got married back at home in Yorkshire. We had a week's honeymoon in the UK, and then she came out a few weeks later. And we moved into a new flat. I moved out from Phil's flat into, well, it was in Sleema. It was on the, I think it was Point Street, I think I was on. A block of flats, which is now, had a great view at the time, but I think it's got a tower block in front of it now. And it was 88 steps. Gosh. Up.
No lift.
No lift.
Okay, so that's definitely an enduring memory of Malta. Tell us a few other memories of Malta that stayed with you. What would you do, for example, to entertain yourselves in the evening or go out?
Yeah, well, we did a lot of eating out. A lot of eating out. We loved having pizza and stuff like that. Obviously, we were based in around Sleema, St. Julian's, neck of the woods. And so we'd go to that restaurant, that is a real tourist hotspot nowadays, overlooking St. Julian's Bay. I presume it's still a pizza restaurant there at the moment, just down the road from Frank Salt's office. So we'd have there. I'd got my English car with me, so we'd drive around and have a look. We loved going across to Gozo for a day and getting on the ferry. That was good. And also, I did bring... I got married, I did bring a little sailing boat with me on the top of my car. well, I think it came by container ship, actually. We took it home by car. And so I used to keep my little sailing dinghy in Valletta. I think there was an army barracks there, and I kept the boat there for a while and used to sail around...
A place called Hay Wharf, I think, near that big hotel. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I used to sail around there in my little boat a little bit. And then we took it up to up the coast a little bit. I forget where it was, but where the salt flats are. We take it up there for a Salina. While as well. Yeah. And so I sailed around a bit, but we just generally, and I remember going to the open-air nightclubs, they were very good. Really enjoyed those. And we had lots of crazy parties. I remember I've still got photographs of us on all wearing silly hats on a hat party we did.
The Island Sun Party at Jampool, I remember that one, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, loads of people turned up to that, I remember.
It was... And so, yeah, we used to spend, I think I used to sometimes have a little snooze in the afternoon and then party at night and then get up silly early for the radio show every day because I was on at 6 a.m.
And apart from people like me and Gianni, who you've kept in touch with over the years, and it's become easier thanks to Facebook, did you make any lifelong friends from your experience here in Malta that year in 1992?
Well, I think my lifelong friends are you lot, really. You know, Colin and Gianni. It's been nice to catch up because we met last year when I was passing through, and that was fantastic. And Marco, who was a head of accounts.
Mark DeMarco. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then there's a few. There's a lady called Barbara Endurer, and. She's been in touch with me for a lot, and she was one of the sales guys' wives.
Yes, Austin Angerous.
And they had a restaurant, actually, at the time.
Candles, I think it was called.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I've got an ashtray from there somewhere at home.
It was in Patcherville. And I remember it, yes.
We keep in touch with them. And then, I got a call, Dan, you know them, from a lead singer of the Flying Alligators.
Oh, Ronnie. Oh, goodness me.
Ronnie, yeah.
Because they had just released an album at that time, their debut album. They used to play them.
That's right. And we were interested. Somebody said, it probably be Frank or whatever, said, you've got to play some local music. And interesting, I love the Flying Alligators songs, and I was quite happy to play them. Phil was a bit lukewarm about playing local music because he wanted it all to be, you know, standard.
Familiar pop hits. I remember there was even a question whether we should play Italian music at the time because Italian music was and still is big in Malta, but the station was being run by Phil, who had no experience with it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, Phil was fairly set in his ways about the music we played, and that's very common. Practice in UK commercial radio. It's nice to catch up. And there's a lady called Katie that I keep in touch with, who was Katie Luce. And she spends a lot of time in Malta still. And she was there to help with the news operation at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And she didn't ever live in Malta full time, but she came out as a sort of kind of consultant, I guess, to help the new sort of news team work out how to do the news. So I talked to Katie occasionally, and then occasionally I meet people that were listeners around the place, and they say, "Oh, you on that?" It's getting less and less now because it was quite a long time ago.
Yeah,
but for a while, I came back a few years later for a quick holiday, and I got recognised on the beach still, which was unbelievable.
Oh, wow. From your voice or like somebody heard you talking?
From the voice. Yeah, wow. Somebody heard me talking, yeah.
Looking in your eyes, I see a paradise. This world that I found is too good to be true. Standing here beside you, want so much to give you this love in my heart that I'm feeling for you. Let them say we're crazy, I don't care about that. Put your hand in my hand, baby, don't ever look back. Let the world around us just fall apart. Baby, we can make it if we're heart to heart.
Listeners of this program here on Campus 103.7, I'm interviewing James Watt, who lived in Malta for a year in 1992, and he was the breakfast presenter on the now defunct Island Sound Radio. Quite an interesting, exciting time, lots of new radio stations opening up in Malta. But if you remember James on the radio here and you'd like to get in touch with him, James is on Facebook, so you'd be very happy to hear from your former listeners.
Absolutely.
Wouldn't you?
Absolutely, yes. I'm on the Facebook and all the social medias. I tend to go with James Watt UK works for most on all the Instagrams and X and all that sort of thing as well. So search me out and say hello if you remember those days, and we can share memories and grayer hairs and all that sort of thing.
Can you tell us the reason what happened? Did you get a better offer to move back to the UK?
Yeah, well, the problem with it, and it's a big problem with the radio industry, and people don't talk about it very much. People rarely leave radio stations on a good of terms as when you arrived. And so there'd been, for whatever reason, they'd decided to that they didn't really want me anymore. Mm. They pulled me in the office one day and said, "We're not going to renew your contract now." The official thing was because of work permit problems. Now, I still think that was probably a bit of an excuse, but it meant that I was going. There's another guy we'd come across that might have moved to the island that they fancied using. And so that ended. Now, I've been in radio a long time now, and this happens on a too often a period. You know, it happens to myself and to other presenters. So I came back home, and then immediately I jumped into the job of the guy that replaced me here in Malta.
Oh.
So, because I heard all this was going on, and so I rang the radio station he was currently working at and said, did you know your afternoon guy's leaving? And no, he's not. And I went, yeah, he is. He's going to take my job in Malta. And so in about 3 weeks' time, you'll have no afternoon presenter. Why don't I do it? And so he
that was
said,
quite forward of you.
Yeah, yeah.
The genius.
He said, okay, why not, you know? So I went across, and it was, the trouble was it was in Swansea, which is a perfectly nice place, but not somewhere I really fancied living. So I went to work in Swansea. But in the meantime, I'd been back in touch with my friends at BFBS, who'd offered me the job before I came out to Malta. And so I phoned them up, and they said, well, we haven't really got much quite at the moment, but we've got a few shifts, a few shows that you could do in our London office in the centre of London. And so after about 3 or 4 weeks, I left the Swansea station and drove, and we all lived in London. And those few shows turned into more and more. And then after a while, a year or two, they offered me a full-time job. And they said, how do you fancy doing the breakfast show in Germany for BFBS Germany, which was broadcast not only to Germany, but it was the time of the peacekeeping force in the Balkans, so Croatia and Bosnia.
Oh.
And there was a big British army contingent out there. And we broadcast our breakfast show to Germany and to the Balkans at the same time. And that connected the audience between the two countries, because the wives were tended to live in Germany and the guys tended, and it was that way in those days, were fighting or peacekeeping in the Balkans.
You made such an impact in the late 90s on with your BFBS breakfast show, and you raised morale so much amongst these soldiers and their wives that you were even considered, however briefly, for Radio 1's hot seat, the best seat in, you know, on radio, which was the breakfast show on BBC Radio 1, when a controversial English presenter called Chris Evans was going to leave, and you were being considered.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
You were being considered for that position for a while, weren't you? I remember reading about it in The Sun, saying, I know this bloke.
Yeah, yeah, I nearly got lucky, but it didn't happen. But yeah, so Chris Evans was still is a great presenter, and he'd decided that he didn't want to work Fridays, and the BBC weren't having that. They said you got to work Monday to Friday. You can't have Fridays off, and he was having a bit of a huff about the whole thing. So I got in touch with them and said, well, I'll take over. I'd just won a big radio award was the thing. Mm-hmm. So I'd won a New York radio award for best breakfast show in the world, would you believe?
Wow.
So I got a medal, and I'd been to New York fairly recently. And the thing was that Chris Evans hadn't won it, and I had. Now, who knows this time whether Chris Evans ever put his name forward to win best breakfast show in the world, but he did, maybe he did, maybe he didn't, but he didn't win it anyway. I did. And so that came at the sort of time I just won that award, and Chris Evans was about to leave Radio 1, and they were obviously looking for someone who's a bit crazy, and, you know, we're a little bit similar in many ways. So that's how that nearly happened. It didn't happen, but that's the way it goes. But I was living in Germany at the time for BFBS. And it was all a bit more difficult in those days to get backwards and forwards. There weren't any cheap flights.
Mm.
And the internet was in its very early days. So people didn't communicate like they did at the moment. So it was all phone calls. The only way people could hear me was for me to send a cassette of it or drive to the area of the radio station. But it was a nearly B, but it never happened.
Indeed.
But that's the way of life, isn't it? I did come back not long after that to work for a station up in the northeast called Century Radio, which was a big regional station right across the northeast of England. And I did an early breakfast show for them to get back to the UK, because we wanted to try our luck in the UK to see if I could hit the big time. And so early breakfast is 5 till 7 in the morning. So that's very early.
Yeah.
And so I did that for a while, but they'd said that if I do that for a while, they'll put me on the breakfast show. As long as I get more listeners between 5 and 7 than the breakfast guy did. And unbelievably, that happened.
Oh, wow.
But they failed to come through forward for the deal. Oh. So I then left there and moved on.
But nevertheless, you continued in radio and you've had stints on various BBC stations over the years. What are you doing nowadays?
Well, I'm doing that. I'm working for some newer stations. One in particular called Coast and County Radio, which is based in North Yorkshire, which is where I live. So that's what I'm doing now. And I worked for the BBC for 20 or 30 years, all over the country. But I had a long, long stint at Radio Derby in the Midlands, and a long stint at Radio Oxford. And that was great fun being down in the big university city. Down the south, but I still lived in Yorkshire when I did all these shows and travelled. This is amazing in Malta, but I used to commute some days 400 miles to do a radio show.
Gosh, yeah, totally different from this country, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd love to continue asking you about your career and hearing about the famous people you've interviewed and adventures that you've had, but the subject of the show is really Malta through international eyes. So let's bring it back to you and Malta. For example, when you visited last year, did you see big changes from when you lived here in 1992?
Yeah, it's great memories, of course. I remember there was... one of the big things when we were there, there were no motorways. They just built a motorway, which was about half a mile. And that was big news. They'd got one set of traffic lights, I think, in the whole island.
Yes. I didn't see that probably, yeah. And when you say motorway, it's being generous. It's kind of like a big wide A road. But yes, I understand what you mean.
Yeah,
we do
right,
have more of these sort of bypasses nowadays.
Yeah. But my memories are great. I remember the people. I remember it's the sort of the vibe of the place is really nice and warm and friendly. I think you feel, if being an island nation, you feel a little bit, we're a bit different from everyone else and we're a bit independent, even though you're part of Europe. But you've got that spirit of being your own mind, your own people. And it's handy that you speak English for me because I can understand you. But you do very much have a familiar identity.
Are you saying that that's a similar trait that we share with the Brits? We're both island nations, and so we do our own thing?
Yes, I think so. I think that's probably why we got a good kinship between the two of us, because we're both island nations. We feel a little bit out on our own. We're a little bit suspicious of the big European nations, of course, Britain or Britain went and did the whole thing and decided to leave Europe, which is a whole other story. But that's where that comes from, I think. The spirit of being a little bit independent is very strong. But I just love the vibe. Obviously, the weather's lovely. It's too hot when I was there last summer, of course, as we know. It was the hottest day of the year, I think, probably. I love the quirkiness, the food, the going around the place. We always go to Mdina and have chocolate cake.
Yeah.
That's one of our, if we go there, go to Malta, we always make a beeline for that. In fact, my daughter, who is now working on cruise ships. She's trained to be a ship's captain.
Oh, wow.
Is coming through Malta in a few weeks' time, and she will make sure she takes some of her buddies to show them the great views, and the best chocolate cake in the world is found in Malta.
Oh, fantastic. Yes, that is true. I must concur about that. How about maybe some less happy memories or negatives that maybe you associate with Malta, if any, apart from maybe work problems that you mentioned earlier on?
You could never get anything done. I remember getting, when I got married, Zoe decided we wanted lots of stuff coming through because, newly married couple, and we got stuff sent on a container ship, and it was very hard to get stuff through customs. I presume this may have changed in 2025.
Absolutely.
But the way to get stuff through, and this was Zoe's full-time job with the station, the UK staff at the station, was to go down customs in her shortest skirt to get stuff through quicker, because that seemed to wheel the oils of efficiency somewhat over. Get through, but all the officialdom was crazy, and and like officialdom is, quite slow and bureaucratic. So that was a little bit annoying. I mean, I quite enjoyed the potholes and the bumpy roads, but you could never. The thing that was interesting, you're talking about, I was talking about going all that way for my commutes to Radio Oxford. If I needed a new gas bottle and it was down the other end of town, like, about 7 miles away, I really couldn't be bothered to go that far for a new gas bottle, because that was like the other end of the world.
And yet you've driven 400 miles a day to get to your job in the UK. The perspective changes when you're in Malta, doesn't it?
yeah. But I think it was all good. Sometimes a bit smelly past the salt flats.
I remember, yes, Salina was like that. That's improved as well. All these things you're mentioning have changed, including the roads, much better nowadays, although there are still pockets of bumpiness. Yes. And the bureaucracy has, maybe thanks to the internet as well, things are much, much better. Does Malta get mentioned a lot as a possibility for a tourist? Do people think about coming to Malta to work or to visit, or does it not register very much on the radar, of younger people?
Yeah, no, I think Malta has still got a little bit of an image in the UK as somewhere that older people might go. Mm. I think that's changing slowly. Radio 1 often do big Malta weekenders.
Indeed, yes. Annie Mac.
I don't know, take that with her last year as well.
Yes.
And so I think that is slowly changing, and those sort of things where they have sort of, Ibiza-style weekends in Malta is changing slowly.
We've got our own Love Island nowadays.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's right, when you've arrived in that case. Yeah. Are you on that one? You're not going to be appearing on Love Island, are you?
Not on Love Island. I'm waiting for them to bring over this new show they have on ITV called The Virgin Island.
Malta is on. You can get sort of cheaper flights now to Malta, and mm-hmm. so it's becoming more affordable, because people tend to go to Mallorca and Ibiza and Spain a lot still, and the Canaries. If they're getting as far as the Canaries, they may as well come to Malta, because mm-hmm. it's a similar timing.
Indeed.
And so I think people are slowly making their way to Malta. It's on the system. People are aware of it, and the fact that you speak English and I don't know if you still have red telephone boxes. We don't have red telephone boxes in the UK anymore, but you've got that sort of
still
feel.
Got a few, yeah.
I think as you get more and more of these young events coming through, that might help with your tourists. But it's certainly a lot easier, and it's certainly on my radar, that's for sure.
Will you be coming back? Do you see yourself maybe retiring here or something like that?
Well, I mean, now with the joys of Brexit, it's nearly impossible to retire anywhere apart from the UK.
Oh dear!
Because what's being forgotten about with that is that not only are we not letting anyone in, we're not letting anyone out, which is a bit of a problem for someone that is a bit of a traveller. So maybe that will get sorted out. But I'm certainly spend as planned to come again and spend another while in Malta, because it's just a place that's familiar to me, and I enjoy the people and the food and the atmosphere of the place.
That's wonderful. You're always welcome here. James Watt, who was the first voice to be heard on the fondly remembered Island Sound Radio, which was opened between 1992 and 2002, approximately. It was a private radio station that for most of its life was broadcasting completely in English. James played the very first song on that radio station as well, Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now. Do you remember that? There was a competition.
I do remember it, yeah. A competition to win £1,000, I think we might have given away.
Something like, guess the first song we're going to play. Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. Everybody thought it was going to be Simply the Best by Tina Turner.
Ah, there we go.
So but it wasn't.
Your final message, James Watt, to the people of Malta from who you've known and are very fond of since 1992 and your experience at Island Sound Radio.
Well, if you do remember me from those days, well, that's amazing. That's really lovely to know. And do get in touch, because now the internet has made it all super easy to get in touch and be part of it. I'm not that scary, really. I'm still doing the same old nonsense on the radio. You just got the jokes first 30-odd years ago, whatever it was.
Indeed.
But do search me out on the internet. I'm there. I've got various podcasts with various famous people talking to various famous people, which are quite fun. And then the radio shows that, you know, I'm doing a bit less talking on my current shows. But search me out and say hello, and I'll say hello back. It'd be lovely to see you. And who knows, we maybe have a drink one day next time I'm in Malta, or you come to Yorkshire, come and say hello.
James Watt, thank you very much for being my guest. I'm Colin Fitz on Minainain Barani in Malta through International Eyes on Campus 103.7.
Whatever.